And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this?
A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Visit DirecTV.com. Claim based on total games offered on national and regional sports networks with choice package or higher. Availability of RSNs varies by zip code and package. High-speed internet service required. Terms and restrictions apply.
Hear that podcast growling,
mean and angry.
Hear that co-host shouting, it's Danger and Jay.
All right, welcome to the latest edition. You hear that podcast growling. Paul Ehner Jr. and Jay Morrison of The Athletic. Excited to be with you here on a Wednesday. We're on the Wednesday schedule now, Jay.
One step closer to the holiday weekend.
Yeah, we're getting there. We're getting there. And a step closer to the dead period. We're almost there. It feels kind of dead right now. I know there's a lot of topics, but there's a lot of topics out there now that are somebody says something that's already been said 15 times right. And now we have to talk about it again, or trying to make something out of nothing. Hey, here's a guy who's doing something different. Haven't seen a lot of best shape of my life stories out there yet, but they're coming.
Training camp.
Oh yeah. That's much more of a training camp trope. How are you doing?
I'm great. I'm not in the best shape of my life. I can say that confidently. But I'm doing great otherwise.
It's awesome. So we're gonna do something a little bit different today. A slight move, and that is we're gonna kind of focus a little bit on some of the questions that you guys have, because it's wide open right now. There's not a lot of really new stuff happening, which we'll discuss at the top. And so we want to kind of put it in your hands, and we did, and you guys responded, because you always do.
Yeah.
You're solid in coming up with whether it's questions you have or anything we ask you to do, giving Jay homework. You always got something. So we've got some of your questions that you guys send in to us. So we're going to spend the majority of this episode running through some of those. There were some repeated topics, so we'll put a little emphasis on some of those. Mo Egger, of course, from ESPN 1530 joining us. Great to have Mo coming on here in a little bit, as always. We'll do a little bit of, it's sort of a betting game, but not really. It's really kind of taking a little bit of an assessment of the schedule and in the way that we like to do it with Mo. So hopefully y'all will enjoy that. And of course, we've got to talk about T. Higgins. Because, you can't have an episode that goes by where we don't talk about T. Higgins or mention Joe Mixon's situation. These are the two things now that we have to, or Burrow's contract, of course. But we're almost past that now.
Yeah.
I have the official retweet that I can hit, which is I have the story written on the numbers that matter whenever Burrow signs his contract, what to keep in mind whenever Burrow signs his contract. So I can just keep hitting retweet and then the finger arrow down to hey, read this again. Someone else is talking about this again read this again. Hey, so then 3 days later, they're talking about Burrow's contract again. Read this again. It's good to have. I wanted to make sure we had that in the bucket so that we can easily take care of things over the course of the next, 2 months as we try to get closer to camp.
Yeah, I enjoyed all the breaking news of Burrow will be the highest paid player in the league. I think that's been discussed for weeks, months now.
I remember saying it in 2021. I mean, where we were talking about he's going to crack 50 million. He's going to be record setting contract. I mean, I don't even feel like I need to say anything other than I just call it the future record setting contract. I mean, it's just it's just the assumed truth forever. So and thanks everybody that's watching us here on YouTube. I know we've been off YouTube. We've had all kinds of stuff going on last week. We've been on vacations. We've been doing different recordings and had interviews in spliced in. So good to have everybody back here on YouTube looking at us. We're still alive. I'm not too sunburnt yet. Jay's still in the dark. Like,
I have some lidar.
At some point, Jay will get some lighting besides the, like, what looks like a leg lamp potentially back behind him. At some point. I like you in the dark, Jay.
I mean, I thought I was going to move upstairs to one of my kids' bedrooms, but then my son is doing an internship in Columbus this summer, not living in Athens. So all of his stuff came home. All of his stuff is in that room. So I'm still in my family / dining room in the dark. I have every window open. I have every light on, and I think it's my camera. I don't think I'm actually in a dark room. I think I just have a bad laptop camera.
Very possible. You need to upgrade.
Hello, New York Times.
So let's talk. If you have questions that you want to drop into us, go ahead and do that into the comments section, and maybe we'll add them in as we get going through the Q&A later on. So you know, feel free to do that, and we'll try to get to some of those. Let's start here. News: the Bengals Ring of Honor nominees are out. They're the same guys that we talked about last year. Jay, do you have leftover thoughts on from last year of who should get in this year? Did they hit your pick last year? Did you have Isaac last year as well, or did you have a different?
I had Isaac. I can't remember if I had Willie.
We all had Willie. I felt like we all had Willie.
Did we? Okay. Year. Yeah, because he's borderline Hall of Fame, and yeah. This year, I mean, I don't know about most. It feels like a lock based on fan vote. It's going to be Boomer and Chad. And it's not to say those are bad picks. That it's a popularity contest. But I don't know. I don't know. I hope Lamar Parrish gets in at some point. I saw an article somewhere was talking about he was actually the better player than Ken Riley. I don't know if I agree with that, but the fact that you could make that argument says a lot about how great Lamar was. And he's in that era and he's getting older. So I would hope that it'd be great if every year it was an older guy and then a more recent guy, but I know that's not how it goes with fan voting. And a lot of the people that are voting are younger. They've only heard stories about the older guys. But I do hope Lamar gets his due at some point. I don't think it's going to be this year.
I mean, the only thing about that is you do have more powerful votes coming from the longtime season mm-hmm. ticket holders and I think we've seen that maybe play out in the Isaac Chad mm-hmm. vote. I will say the under the radar name that maybe I want to see get more run or that I think deserves more run. I'd agree with you. You know, Lamar Parrish obviously was a special player from back in the day, so maybe those that have those powerful votes can attest and have some weight in that. Along those lines, I think Tim Crumrie needs to get more love. I just mm-hmm. don't feel like I hear his name often enough, and if it is, it's usually to talk about, oh, you know, his leg injury in the Super Bowl. This dude was the heart and soul of that bang, and he was a absolute monster defensive tackle forever. Okay. And a mainstay, everything that defense was about. I'm not saying he's going to get in or I think he's going to get in. I just don't think we hear his name enough when it comes to the Ring of Honor conversation. There's a lot of flashier players. Mm-hmm. Give me Tim Crumrie's bloody nose underneath the face mask with the bar coming down the middle for the type of, you know, what I think of old school football, the Bengals of the 80s. That's certainly one that I think deserves more in the conversation when we start talking about that. Not saying that there aren't a bunch. A lot of people talking about Lap. Mo has talked about this. We talked about it on this show yesterday on ESPN 1530. Lap needs to get in, and it needs to be a separate thing.
Yeah,
we're not going to compare the playing career of Dave Lapham up against the playing career of these other guys. Dave Lapham is an institution. He's one of the most recognizable people for anybody that knows anything at all about the Bengals. And that needs to be regarded that way, as a person who for almost the entirety of the existence of the organization has been a part of it. And for the last, three, four decades, been a face and voice of it. And nobody cares about the organization more, you know? And I think that needs to just be a separate entry. That needs to be a look, vote for these other people based on the field. Lapp needs his name up there because he's Mr. Bengal.
Yeah, I think that will. I'm not trying to push Lapp out the door, but if he ever decides to retire, I think that would be kind of the retirement ceremony thing where he gets his, they unveil his name in the Ring of Honor at that point. But who knows? He's still doing a great job. I don't think there's any interest in him in retiring. He still looks great for his age. But you know, you see some of these other guys that the love that they get when they step down, like Doug Deacon in Cleveland. And I think that would be a great honor for Lapp whenever he does call it quits. And again, I hope it's not anytime soon.
Screw that. What are we waiting for? You going to wait till someone walks off, or were we going to wait till something happens? It goes back to the same conversation we had about Ken Riley. When someone deserves it, give it to them. I don't want to wait for some terrible news to happen and they never got their day. Now, not that Lapp doesn't get days. Like, I mean, everybody knows and loves Lapp. I get it. But his name deserves to be up there and it deserves to be a one-off. I'm with that. Mo has been the driver of that and I'm with him on that. Let's move on from that. Votes can be cast now. If you want to go place your vote, if you are a season ticket or suite holder, you get votes in that.
About next year? Lapp broke in with the Bengals in 74. Next year would be the 50-year anniversary of that.
There you go, Jay.
Perfect
time. You just did it. You just, at least that's better than saying wait till Lapp decides to quit. You know, it's just find a number, find a date that works. So there you go. Yeah. 50 years. They should announce it on his draft day anniversary. Right?
Yeah. I don't know how many people out there have heard it. We've heard the story of his draft day where he had to bribe people in his dorm to stay off the payphone in his dorm in case he got drafted. And that's how the Bengals let him know. They called a payphone in his dormitory to say, we want you to come play for us.
I'll have to ask Dave if he still has a landline in his house, and we'll have to have Mike Brown called Lapp's landline at his house and do it old school style, just like they did back in the day. After that, we had the latest in the phase two things. I'm not going to call them practices, exercising. They did some exercising on the field. It's different than the phase one, which is literally just, you know, working with the trainers and out there running a little bit and stretching and what have you. But there's no 7-on-7. There's no 11-on-11. There's none of that stuff. No one-on-ones. It's defenses working. And the only thing they can do is have other defenders standing in offensive positions in front of them. It's walk-through-y in nature. Now there's throwing. I mean, it's, you know, Joe Burrow dropping back, throwing a go ball to T. Higgins, on air. It's everything on air. So whatever that does for you, but it's work. It's a little over an hour. They do it a couple times and that's that. So that's what's going on. No Jonah Williams, no Tyler Boyd, amongst notables. Still, that has continued. So Jonah and TB, I think we'll be looking for when the mandatory mini camp happens. That's June 12th through the 14th. The thought and out there now is that Jonah is expected to show up for that. We'll see if TB does as well. Two guys who I think certainly were put on notice by moves that happened this offseason and some that we have seen coming.
Yeah, I mean, the TB one more so just based on age, but the Jonah one, obviously, still looking for a second deal, and by them signing Orlando Brown, not happy about that. But we've said it a bunch of times here, he's not going to leave $12.6 million on the table, and if he did, then he's in the same position he's in right now. He does not enter free agency next year. He would be beholden to that fifth year option next year if he elected to sit out this year. So he's going to report at some point.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And no worries on that. And so, you know, he's gonna show up when he's supposed to. So when he has to. You don't have to right now.
All right, let's take a second and switch gears here and hear from a sponsor.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this? A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Visit DirecTV.com. Claim based on total games offered on national and regional sports networks with choice package or higher. Availability of RSNs varies by zip code and package. High-speed internet service required. Terms and restrictions apply.
I don't want to belabor this point because I do feel like we've talked about it a lot, not just this year, but last year, because the same thing was the case. We've talked about the very light nature of the offseason. And here's the thing. I mean, the Bengals have leaned into this more so than almost anyone. That's just been the nature of the way that Zach Taylor has decided to do it. Last year, it was because they played so late into the season. They went to the Super Bowl. Their coaches and everybody are so involved in draft process and everything. So they really pared everything down to arriving later, not having hardly as many practices. Here's the basis of they're doing. It's almost the same exact schedule as last year. Okay. I sort of wanted to get a little bit more into the philosophy behind it, how it developed, why they've leaned so hard into it, why they're doing that again, and the take on the players, the take from the coaches, the take from Zach Taylor on deciding to go this route because of this. For people that don't know, so you have the ability to have 16 practice sessions of some type over the course of the offseason. That is the max you can do under the CBA. That includes 10 OTAs, 3 days of a mandatory mini camp, and 3 days of a rookie mini camp, 16 total opportunities. You have 13 teams plus five teams that have a first-year head coach. First-year head coaches can take actually extra time. You get an extra week as part of your program, and you still have the full allotment, all taking the full allotment there. So 18 of the 32 other 31 teams and the full max 16, and then a bunch of them very close to the full max. The Bengals take 7. Okay, nobody else, only the Eagles have single digits as well. The Bengals are the lowest. The Eagles have 8. Bengals and Eagles are very similar, 7, 8, which the Eagles just did a 2-day rookie mini camp, and the Bengals just did the 1 day. To call it 1 day actually feels, it should have been like a quarter of a day. Can you do a 0.25? I mean, they went out there and stretched for about an hour and ran around a little bit. That was it. It was barely anything. So opportunities they decided to pass on. You know, they're not going to be out there working out. And the difference, OTAs, people, you know, there's people, you're seeing these videos of other teams. You're seeing they're in helmets. They're working. You're seeing like sled day with Mike Vrabel. And like these guys are out there. They're really getting after it. 11 on 11. Once you go in OTAs, you can do that stuff. You can do the 7-on-7s. You can do the 9-on-7s. There's stuff, one-on-ones. You can do that stuff. Once you get into that level, they're just passing on that. They don't want to do that. And like you see, the most of the rest of the league is not, is going full out. And there's a reason for that. I think they're in talking to players, obviously players love it. No stunner there. Take it easy on the players. And the PA is really fighting for everyone's schedule to look like the Bengals' schedule. I talked to Mike Thomas, who has been, is 11 years now? Been around everywhere. He's an NFLPA exec board member. I talked to Sam Hubbard, who's been around here, been in the Marvin teams. Ted Karras, who's a rep, who's been with the Patriots, who you might imagine take all 16 every year, no days off there, and a bunch of other guys on amongst that leadership group about how that goes over, and it all sounded the same. I mean, there's just an insane trust built and appreciation and a feeling that they're being heard, that this is what they need, this is what they want, and this is how you can take advantage of the luxury of having a staff where everybody's been around. You're not learning new schemes. You've got coaches and coordinators that have been here for 5 years. You've got a veteran core that's been together. They don't need all that time. So you can take it easy on guys. You can build trust. You can focus on chemistry and think, get everybody here. Here's a sample of that as I talked to Mike Thomas about that yesterday.
In particular, this is like the lightest offseason in the league. You know, do you guys notice that? Is that something that means a lot to you guys as players?
Oh, definitely. And we try to let Zach know that we respect him for that and that we love it. You know what I'm saying? That we love the schedule at any chance we get. You know, we gotta make sure he knows and understands that. And when it's time to work, we work. But Zach, you gotta know, we love this.
Well, because it's like I was going through the actual numbers, and I mean, 20 of the 31 teams take a full 16 practice allotment, and you know, you guys have 7 days, and he'll probably give you one of those off. Like, but I mean, is that something? What are those meetings like when you guys talk about that? Do you guys approach him with that is that something?
I think that's something he believes in. Clearly, I think that's something that's probably going to be a trend moving forward, like throughout this league, and you know, some coaches apparently are ahead of the curve. but at the same time, it's one of those things where I think all the players appreciate it because we're getting a chance to let our bodies heal. Still getting our work, still here building trust, building chemistry. But at the same time, I think Zach knows and understands that this is time you need to.
This is not the time.
You feel me? To be banging and pushing and losing guys, the injury, the soft tissue and whatnot. He understands that, he gets that. I think the organization has done a great job building a culture like this, and we're able to take that and continue to get better.
Is it, when it's like this, is it easier for everyone to relax and not feel like they have to be out there proving themselves? Because isn't that where a lot of offseason injuries come from? Is guys trying to make a point, guys trying to go too hard. Does that kind of set a tone of like, hey, we're about get the work in, but we're not out here trying to do anything?
Exactly. Definitely, because you're coming in with a different mindset, different attitude.
Yeah.
And it's forced. You know what I'm saying? Like, if we were like, no, we're competing out here, then to your point.
Yeah.
Different tempos because it is the offseason. You got vets that like understand it. You got a young dude coming in trying to prove himself.
Yeah.
It's going to be, you know what I'm saying? There's going to be a different set of tempos, right? So I think this eliminates all of that, right? Mm-hmm. But we're still out there, like I said, we're still out there working, getting our work in. And out of all the places I've been and seen, if a vet had to choose, I'm sure they'll love to choose this over anywhere.
I'm sure. Well, how different is it, though? I mean, do you feel that in the season?
Constantly.
Like in December and January, you do feel the difference.
You feel the difference.
Yeah.
Right now, you feel the difference during the season all the time. Man. Again, Zach.
Again, Zach, we love it. I mean, he'd lean into the recorder to make sure. Tells that, we love it. We love it. Well, and you know, Sam, when I was talking to Sam about it, Sam Hubbard, he said, look, when I was the first couple of years, because I said, well, was there a time earlier in your career where you wanted that? Where you wanted that time to be out there to get that, where you felt like you needed to get better. You felt like you needed to prove yourself. And he said, well, maybe not really, because you know what happened? I got hurt. He said, I hurt my thumb. I had a hamstring. He said he had, I have to go back through the tape. I think he said it was a labrum or something like that. He's like, and so I didn't get better. I didn't even get an opportunity to be out there because I was going too hard and got myself hurt. We've seen it before. Jonah Williams, right? Will Jackson. We've seen guys lose seasons during the OTA portion, and the Bengals lean on their sports science people to know how far they can push during this time of year and to make sure that they don't have that stuff. They don't have the nagging hamstring injury incurred during OTAs or some dumb contact thing, because guys, like Mike said, are trying to go too hard when you have young guys out there trying to prove themselves, and that is noticed by players. And you're gaining a reward in everyone feeling like they're in this thing together, not coaches versus players. And that's established early. It's not coaches versus players. It's not push on you, push on you, push on you. It's we're in this together. I hear you. Let's do this together. let's trust you to do your work. Hubbard talked about, you know, he doesn't like when he sees it feels like other teams are babysitting their players, not trusting them to do the work on their own and be ready. And that's not something that exists here.
Yeah, I mean, I guess if there's a downside to it, it would be the undrafted guys, the late round picks that kind of do need to prove themselves. They need more work. The coaches and scouts probably would like to see a little more out of them to know what they have. But you've got a roster where it's going to be really hard for those guys to crack anyhow. And now with the 16-man practice squad, it makes all the sense in the world. And Dax Hill brought up a great point when I was talking to him yesterday where, you know, last year before his rookie year, these guys are so focused on all their training goes into getting ready for the combine and getting ready to do those specific drills and not necessarily football stuff. And so that lends itself to those soft tissue injuries when they come in, if they have to go too hard in OTAs coming off of that whole combine prep. So it just makes sense. And it also, the guys, the rookies that are going to be counted on, the new guys like Nick Scott, Orlando Brown, it allows them to really dive into the scheme. It's so much more about the classroom part of it and the studying it as opposed to going out and doing it on the field. And you don't feel like you're being rushed to have to learn everything all at once. It's the learning process is slower. The physical process is slower. And the other downside, you know, people point to the 0-2 last year. Was that a result of the soft offseason? I mean, I think the Clark Harris injury and the Joe Burrow appendectomy were bigger causes for that 0-2 start than what they did in April and May.
Yeah. And so that's the other side of it, okay? And this is where, and I talked to Zach Taylor about this yesterday, and he said, you know, he can look at that logically. He doesn't look at the slow starts, even, you know, 5-4, 5-4. Okay. Forget 0-2. I mean, teams that needed to learn who they were, they'll point more to 10 in a row. As I've said it many times, I think the best run of football I've ever seen by this franchise, 10 in a row, a run to the Super Bowl, teams that were great late, teams that got better as the year went on, teams that generally stayed healthy. If this team had been out there having slow starts, not finishing great, having injuries for 2 years, you'd say, okay, reevaluate this. But when the proof's in the pudding, it's easy for everybody to say, I mean, it's working.
Mm-hmm.
The last 2 years, you can't ask for a team that's playing better when it matters and staying much healthier. That's kind of been who they've been the last 2 years. And they've been playing in the last two weekends, each of the last two seasons, doing it like this. So argue against that. Okay, there's a million other reasons, but it's clearly not hurting them. And so I think when you have that, it's easy to stay on board with this because, look, you mentioned it, for coaches, for people that are trying to evaluate talent, it's a pain in the butt. You're stealing 9 practices? You know, I talked to Darren Simmons about this, and he's, you know, he said he came in here in 03 with Marvin. He came here, been in the league forever. I remember like the back of my hand how it used to be. What you used to be able to get out of the offseason program and feel like you, especially for him, he's trying to train guys who are young, who have never hardly done special teams in their life. It's different when you're an offensive guy and a guy knows how to run routes. A guy knows their position. You're trying to take guys that were great their whole careers on offense and defense, maybe didn't play a lot of teams, and to teach them this. You only have so many opportunities. And so to lose those, it's tough. And that's a balance that the head coach has to strike when he makes this schedule. And you've seen, I think, Zach Taylor side with the players, side with gaining trust there over whatever it is that you can get by actually going through all of these practices. And he did say, look, if I was a first year coach, I would look like all these other teams. I'd have all 16. I need everything I can get, but this is the advantage of where we're at as a team. We don't have to do that. And it does buy us something on the other side in terms of what you get from your players.
And it is kind of a new school, old school philosophy too. Yeah. It'd be interesting to see where you looked at the teams and who's doing the most, who's doing the least, and then the age or the experience of the head coach. Because the newer, younger guys are all kind of in that. I think Sean McVay really kind of started that trend of backing off in the spring.
Yeah. Cincy, Philly, Kevin Stefanski in Cleveland are the bottom ones with 11, 8, and 7. But again, almost everybody else is in some version up near the top. I mean, almost everybody has either 9 or 10 OTAs. That's just what it is. But and another point was, look, I don't know, Zach was saying, I don't know what these other teams' OTAs look like. They may... their practices may actually look very, very similar to what we're doing. It's just they kept open the ability for them to do a little bit more if they want to. So he's like, but we don't have that. I don't know what other teams are doing. He's like, I just know what we do and what works here and what I value here. So something as simple as the off-season schedule that seems to be given to you on a template, to rethink it and analyze it, it's fascinating all the different things that a coach has to balance and different point of views and ways you're being pushed from different sides to try to find something that works. And I think it does show your value and a willingness to do something different. Anytime I said, I was joking yesterday, Jay, I was like, I feel like I don't even know if I should even write this story because we talk about it so much. But anytime you're doing something that the rest of the league isn't, it's a story. I don't care what it is, even if it's how you work with long snappers. Like, that's a story. And when it's about your entire offseason schedule and you heard the players, again, that's Mike Thomas. They all sounded like that. I was Ted Karras. Zach was walking by, and I said to Zach Taylor, I said, he just said you're the best schedule maker ever, Zach, ever. And Ted and Zach just kind of laughed and pointed at each other, like, I got you. That means something. Think about your workplace. If you feel like your bosses are listening to you and doing stuff that you want, that's good for your people and not for the people up top. Hmm. Like, that matters to you in your job. All right. Oh, there he is.
There he is.
Hi.
Perfectly timed, as always. Right as I thought to look for you, there you were.
Here I am.
There you are. We just got done discussing a topic that you've never heard us talk about before, and that's Cincinnati Country Club. So I won't. I won't bring you back in again. I would love to go back every time that we've talked during these like 3 or 4 weeks of the off season, how many times the last 2 years that has been an actual segment. I feel like we're hitting like at least 80%, certainly hitting better than anybody on the Reds.
I'm trying to figure out what am I going to talk about more in the coming weeks? What's going to happen if they can't re-sign T. Higgins, or the relatively relaxed atmosphere at Bengals off-season workouts, OTAs, mini camps, and training camp? I don't know. By the end of the summer, I might have a pie chart. We'll find out.
Well, that's perfect, Mo. Oh, go ahead, Jay.
I was just going to say, maybe they'll sign T quickly, and then that'll take that off the table.
No.
Then we have to come up with something else. Then
that's why we're going to talk about T. Higgins right now.
Oh, boy.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Before we get in, we're going to do something. We're going to do a little bit of, it's kind of betting, but it's more about like assessing what you're most confident about in the Bengals and as a team next year with the schedule, because the lines are out for all 17 games. I want to kind of do something with that. But first, there it is right there. There's the lines on all these games that we see for next year that are out. Let's dive in. Here's what I wanted to do. Okay. Let's talk about, you have to make two bets with our fictional units that we love to do here on the Bengals line. They are favored in 15 of 17 games next year. Only week 17 at the Chiefs plus 3.5. And at the Niners in week 8 plus 1. That's the only game they are not favored in next year. Jay, more stats for you. Here's why. Vegas ain't going to keep taking the wash on this one, all right? Bengals against the spread the last 2 years, 11-0-1 when the line is 3, when they're 3-point dogs or more. They're not going to be out here being 3-point dogs anymore. Not this team. Not after going. They proved it now for two straight years. If you're going to make them 3-point dogs or more, you're going to lose. 11-0-1 they've been against those types of lines. The Bengals have 21 games of at least being a 3-point favorite the last 2 years, of which almost every game here at the top of the schedule is until you get to the bye, which is why I like that as a favorable schedule. They're 14-7 against the spread and 16-5 straight up in those games. So you talk about fast start sitting right there if the Bengals just continue to be the team they have been in recent years.
I had my own stats that they, when they're big favorites like they are against the Texans, they don't do well. And yeah, that's one of the games where if I'm picking one that I would jump on right now, I would take Texans plus 9.5. That game, it's sandwiched between two playoff rematches with the Bills and the Ravens. They're 1-4 the last five games when they've been favorites of 9.5 points or more, including a game against the Texans when they were favored by 10.5 and they lost 10-6. 3-14-1 in their last 18 games when they're favored by 9.5 and more. That feels like the classic trap game. You're talking about a first year head coach, a first year quarterback in CJ Stroud, who will have a half a season to get their legs under them. And if I'm circling one game, and maybe Bengal fans don't want to hear this because they would think we would pick the games we would be most confident to bet on the Bengals in, but I take Texans in week 10 as my number one choice.
Yeah, and by the way, you talk about the Bengals trying to cover a big number. That's been a huge issue with Kansas City. My colleague Tony Pike and I joked about this often last year. If you see a -7.5 or larger next to the Kansas City Chiefs, take the points. And as great as they have been in recent years, they've really struggled. I don't have the numbers in front of me because I'm woefully prepared for this, but if you look over the last couple of years, there have been a lot of games that you look at and go, boy, Kansas City's going to blow them out, and either they haven't or they've jumped out to big leads and let the other team come back. There was a game against Denver this year where I think they jumped out to a 27-0 start. They were 10-point favorites in that range and ended up not covering. So folks might roll their eyes at you saying that about the Bengals, but in the NFL, 9.5-point spreads don't get covered that often. And I think what you run into here, in particular with a lot of folks who really don't look at the NFL through that lens, through the gambling lens, when you mention, you know what, I don't have a lot of confidence in them covering against Houston. I saw that number. I don't either. 9.5 points. The back door is open. You never know what might happen in the last 4 or 5 minutes of a game that could, you know, let the team cover the number, even though they were really never that competitive in the game. This happens all the time, and the reigning Super Bowl champions are a prime illustration of that. And so I'm with you. I think the two games that I just immediately cast aside and said I have no confidence. First of all, Houston 9.5. The other was Seattle 4.5. I think that's a sneaky, scary game leading up to the bye. The gauntlet after the bye, there's a decent chance, a non-zero chance the Bengals will be 5-0 going into that game. I think that Seattle team is kind of sneaky good. We'll see if Geno Smith doesn't turn into a pumpkin this year, but if he doesn't, I think they have good talent around him. Are the Bengals probably going to beat the Seattle Seahawks at home? Sure, but 4.5? I don't have a lot of confidence in that game. On our schedule show that Lance Tony and I did, I picked that as a loss. In large part, I think they're going to go 13-4, but you know, there's always sort of a game that you don't expect them to lose. Last year it was Halloween. Not going to be stunned if it's that week 6 game against Seattle. So I am going to show no confidence in either that one or Houston.
Go ahead, Jay.
Well, I was going to say my second one is one that Paul's written about when he wrote his story when the schedule came out, that the division games on the road, especially on Thursday night, very, very hard on the road team. And that's Bengals going to the week 10 with Texans. And my next one is week 11 at the Ravens on Thursday night. Yeah, they're only favored by a point, but going into Baltimore and a chance that maybe you've already beaten Baltimore in week 2 and trying to pull off the sweep and do it on a short week. And I think that's a really tough call. And that would be the other one I would jump on right now. I go ahead and take the Ravens plus 1 in week 11.
Yeah, that's that is that I don't know how I just feel like the numbers are on your side there. I mean, the fact that they're a favorite in a game that traditionally in this division is a really tough one, is a 1-in-4 chance to win. Just the, if you look at the history, I think the numbers are on your side in doing that. That would be one that I would have on there. I would actually parlay that with the Bengals getting 3.5 at the Chiefs. How many times do these teams have to finish in a 3-point game until you take a 3.5 point line? Like every single time they play, it's 3 points. What line did I just tell you? 11-0-1 when at least a 3-point dog the last 2 years. Again, I don't care who it is. I don't care if it's Patrick Mahomes and the greatest in the 2000 Ravens defense. Like, the history is the history. The history between these two teams is what it is. I would take that, the Ravens and the Chiefs lines, and put them together. The other one I would do, give me a 4-team money line parlay weeks 3 through 6. I think the Bengals roll this part of the schedule. Rams, Titans, Cardinals, Seahawks up to the bye. I think they're going to be good. I think they're going to be good early. I don't think you're going to see the 5-4 sluggishness happen again. I think there's probably a split in weeks 1 and 2, and I just, these are teams that they should beat. And I think they've been mostly pretty good at beating teams that they should beat, especially against the Rams on Monday Night Football, a super young team. The Titans are not going to be good. The Cardinals are the worst team in football. And I'll take my chances with the Seahawks on a 4-team parlay at home. So I'm going to do that. I'm going to say bucking this, all this. Oh, they've started slow the last couple of years. Buck that trend. The schedule sets up for them. And I'm not saying they're going to cover them all, but they win them all. And that should be a nice little fictional payout for me.
A 4-team, same team parlay. I'm not sure that's ever happened in recorded gambling history. They should be 5-1 at the bye. And so the two games that I have the most confidence in betting the Bengals in are, first of all, that Tennessee game. Because even if you default to, well, look, they've started slow. Okay, by October 1st, the start of the season is kind of behind us. I think the Titans are going to be dreadful. They've won there each of the last 2 years. And I am really looking forward to the juxtaposition. We'll talk about this all week long. The Cincinnati Country Club versus whatever the hell Mike Vrabel's doing down there with guys pushing sleds in the month of May and stuff like that. They're going to go to Nashville. They're going to destroy the Tennessee Titans. I just don't think they're going to be very good. The Bengals have outplayed them. The two games they've played in the playoffs 2 years ago and last year, they've outplayed them. And I think they go on the road and cover the 4.5. The other one, and this might be somewhat surprising, I get basically a pick 'em at home against Buffalo. Look, the Bills are probably still going to be really good. Odds on favorite to win the AFC East. Can they rush the passer? Von Miller will be back for that game, I suppose. The Bengals dominated them in the snow, in the postseason. And obviously, you know, you do have to acknowledge it had been a really weird few weeks for the Buffalo Bills. And I tremendously look forward to that night, to cheering DeMar Hamlin as he charges out onto the field. That's going to be terrific. Also, before that game got canceled in early December, the Bengals looked like they were going to score 500 points in that football game. I've got to cover a point at home in what is going to be a charged atmosphere against Buffalo, a team that they dominated in the playoffs last year. I'll take my chances with that. I don't have to cover more than a point. Let's go. Win by 2. I cover. I win. I'm happy.
Yeah, that my two, or what you guys already mentioned, if the two that I would pick the Bengals in would be that Chiefs one, getting 3.5 that late in the year. That's going to mean something one way or the other. And like Paul said, all they do is play 3-point games. And then that Bills game, because the week before they go to San Fran and they either lose that game coming off the bye and they come home angry, refocused, however you want to list it. Or they beat San Francisco. They're on this incredible roll, and they do just kind of seem to. I don't know if you can say they have the Bills number after 5 quarters, but it hasn't really looked like the Bills were in the same park with them those last 2 times they met. So 1 point at home, that seems like a really, really good bet for a Bengals team at the point in the season when they typically take off. Week 9, you get past that halfway point, and that's when they really seem to find their groove.
All right, let's just take a quick break.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager. Customers are rushing to your store. Do you have a point-of-sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. Shopify POS is your command center for your retail store. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify has everything you need to sell in person. With Shopify, you get a powerhouse selling partner that effortlessly unites your in-person and online sales into the one source of truth. Track every sale across your business in one place and know exactly what's in stock. Connect with customers in line and online. Shopify helps you drive store traffic with plug-and-play tools built for marketing campaigns from TikTok to Instagram and beyond. Get hardware that fits your business, take payments by smartphone, transform your tablet into a point-of-sale system, or use Shopify's POS Go mobile device for a battle-tested solution. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Do retail right with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/theathletic, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/theathletic to take your retail business to the next level today. Shopify.com/theathletic.
Can I talk about T. Higgins with you, Mo, or will it set you into a bad place?
No, I'm enjoying this topic. I got yelled at. I talked about this on the air with you. I continued it for another segment or two, and then a guy called it and yelled at me for talking about T. Higgins too much. And so now he's in my head. And yeah. So he won't be by 3 o'clock today.
Right. Well, I thought it was a good conversation that we talked about, and I've liked your take on this, and that is one that honestly, sometimes I don't even realize as much that is out there, and that is the fact that there's a freak out nature happening with what if the Bengals lose T. Higgins with some people? What if that happens? And right, sell the team, right? Just it's over.
Move them to Mexico.
Here's how I want to frame it. Mm-hmm. I'm going to give you three options. We can run pass or boot this. Of if I gave you these three things you could do with $25 million, what would you do with them? And let's just take it under the umbrella of for this year, just as part of 1 year. Don't try to look at it for any more than that. Would you rather have T. Higgins at $25 million? Would you rather have Alex Kappa, Ted Karras, and Orlando Brown? Which is basically $25 million in cap. Mm-hmm. Would you rather have Mike Hilton, Chidobe Awuzie, Von Bell, and Jermaine Pratt, which essentially cap out to about $25 million? Which of those three would you rather have, and do you think gives the Bengals a better chance at winning? But the reason I ask is to display that just because you don't have T. Higgins doesn't mean there aren't still quality players that you can have to fill in for that. And you got to think about what sometimes you can be giving up if you do use that money on just one person.
Yeah, look, I would love it if T. Higgins is a Bengal moving forward beyond 2023. He's a terrific player. He's going to get paid. He deserves to get paid. If I lose T. Higgins, I have to replace one guy. Under the options that you presented me, if I choose T and maybe lose three quality offensive linemen? I'm not sure I want that. Or I've got to replace all these guys on defense. So, you know, my perspective has kind of been, I would like T on the team. Who wouldn't? If he leaves, I still have Joe Burrow. I still have Ja'Marr Chase. I have a quarterback that a lot of number two wide receivers would probably love to come play with. I've got a loaded, according to people who write about such things, 2024 wide receiver class in the draft. I'm probably still going to be able to pass the football pretty effectively. Oh, and by the way, my offense can be adjusted. Okay, so maybe we don't throw it quite as much because we're better on the ground. Maybe Chase Brown's the answer. Maybe there's a running back that they add next season in the draft who enables them to run the football a little bit more efficiently and then causes them to run the ball a little bit more often. Maybe the tight end that everybody is dreaming of manifests itself in the draft. And suddenly, I'm still really good on offense. I'm really good in a different way. So I want T. Higgins to be a Bengal, but under this exercise, I'm going to boot T. Higgins. I got to replace one guy. And I still have Ja'Marr Chase for the next two seasons at least. Sorry, I know that's probably not going to fit with the consensus, and there is going to be a freakout factor if they don't get a deal with T. Dunn, and if he does leave, but they have finally built what I think is a competent offensive line. And with this exercise, I'm losing it if I keep T. Sorry, I'm booting T. I am going to run with the offensive line, and I'm going to pass with the guys on defense that you talked about, in large part because I trust what they've done in the draft the last couple of years. And so I'm defaulting to, hey, they've kind of planned for maybe losing some guys on defense with young, cheap talent on that side of the football. But the T. Higgins thing, the more I think about this, I know what it will sound like if we get to September and a deal's not done. And I know what it will sound like if T. Higgins ends up leaving the Bengals via free agency. But I just don't think that's going to be the end of the world. I still think we're going to look at them and go, you know what, as long as Nine's back there, they're okay. And as long as Nine's back there upright and healthy, he's going to find guys that he can throw to and weaponize to make this offense still really, really good.
I mean, even the most fanatical, gotta re-sign Higgins people out there, if you present it to them in the way Paul has here with these three options, I think if they're being realistic, they'd be with you. They would boot the T. Higgins thing. And it's, you know, Ja'Marr Chase can't be in two places at once, but could he put up stats for two people instead of one? I mean, I think the odds are if he loses T. Higgins, it's not going to cost him having him taking pressure off him. I think you're going to see his numbers go through the roof. And, you know, who knows? Charlie Jones can maybe be a guy like he was in college where he's getting a bunch of underneath stuff and catching a ton of balls. And as you said, great class coming out next year. It would be a lot of fun to see them keep the band together, but I just it would be devastating for either one of those other options where you're losing three quality offensive linemen or four quality defensive players. T. Higgins is just one guy, and he's terrific, but you can move on without him and not necessarily survive, maybe even be better.
Well, I'll say this. I mean, it just needs to be reminded to people, without Ja'Marr Chase, who we're all in agreement, Ja'Marr Chase is, T and Ja'Marr are both great. Ja'Marr Chase is a better receiver. Without Ja'Marr Chase last year, they scored 42 against Carolina in one of the most dominant things you've ever seen in a half. They scored 37 at Pittsburgh. And then they went to Tennessee and won with 20. Now, people would point out one of those was a jump ball to T. Higgins. It's fair.
Right.
Mm-hmm. But these were performances without Ja'Marr Chase last year. Throw in the Cleveland clunker, their first game without him. They adjusted. They figured it out. The offense was maybe two of their most impressive offensive performances all year were those two games. Was Carolina and at Pittsburgh putting a good, that was Pittsburgh's defense figuring it out. Mm-hmm. At that point, they were about to hit their run and they put up 37 and Joe Burrow yelled, "We the big dogs."
You know, the Burrow piece, I mean, there's two things. I just default to you have number nine. And if you go, well, yeah, you'll have nine, but you're taking away one of his targets, then don't pay Joe Burrow. Now, does anybody want to go down that road? Like if you think this is all going to fall apart because they lose T. Higgins, who, again, is a number one wide receiver for most of the teams in this league. And if he's on the Bengals in 2024, awesome. I kind of trust him that they'll figure it out. But if you're looking at it going, God, if they don't have T. Higgins, this is going to start to unravel. You better rethink whether you want to give Joe Burrow $55 million a year. And I don't think anybody is going to really rethink that. So, and the other one is, I mean, this, I feel like Joe Burrow taking less has become a larger talking point nationally and maybe even locally than it has for any of these other quarterbacks. I haven't watched these ESPN shows where they're like, oh, you know, what's Justin Herbert going to do? Should he take less? Like, why don't you get your nose out of his money? But I also feel like there's this sense of like, well, Joe wants T here. And then if T's not here, Joe's going to be big mad. My guess is Joe's going to go like, okay, wish he was here. We'll figure it out. I'm Joe Burrow. I'll make a bunch of wide receivers great. This is the plan moving forward. By the way, maybe we can keep some offensive linemen. Maybe we can reinvest in the offensive line. Maybe we can continue to build a good defense that enables me to not have to go out there and hang 40 on every team every week. Like, I feel like the, oh, Joe's going to be mad. We're dealing with a really mature guy who gets it, seems to really grasp the business of football and how it works, and understands that at some point during his tenure as the Bengals franchise quarterback, there are going to be players who he likes, who he enjoys, who he loves playing with, who he's had success with, who end up leaving, either because the Bengals just choose to not re-sign them, or they can't afford them, or that player just gets a better deal elsewhere. Joe's not going to go hide in the corner with his arms folded and deliver a message that he wants to be traded because T. Higgins is gone. He's going to figure out a way to make it work because that's what he does. That's what he does. And that's why they're going to give him 55 mil or more per year.
What? Go ahead, Jay.
Well, I was going to say, I mean, yes, he's not going to pout. He's not going to brood, not going to demand a trade, but it is an interesting question where if he takes less, in the interest of paying T and then they can't get T done, how does that play? It's not going to be Armageddon, but maybe the last thing you want to do is upset Joe Burrow. And again, like you said, it's not going to throw a total monkey wrench in the thing, but how does that go over? Is this a dual negotiation where they're talking to T's people at the same time and saying, okay, this is what Joe's willing to take, and then this is what we've got for you? And is this going to be one of those deals where they announce them almost at the same time?
Not with Logan Wilson, though, because of the whole, you know, Destiny's Child thing we talked about last week.
Michelle Williams, God bless her.
I think there's a difference between you're not happy that the team did something that you don't like, and this is going to ruin what they've built and destroy the dynamic that they've created. I'm sure if T left, Joe would be disappointed and upset, but okay. I mean, then like we all have to, at some point you get over it. And if Joe is interested in accomplishing the things that we all think he can accomplish in this league, there's going to be a time at some point, if he's the quarterback of the Bengals for the next 8 to 12 years, there's probably going to be a time where he's disappointed by something that they do. And that's true for all of us. You still have to figure out a way to get it done. And I trust that Joe will still play at a very high level and win a bunch of football games. But I do think it's a fascinating question because, you know, again, we all love watching T. Higgins, and he's had a huge hand in their success. And if they're going to be really good this year, he'll have a major hand in their success. And if he's a Bengal beyond 2023, I kind of trust him to figure it out. But I just don't view it as the, you know, the apocalyptic circumstance that I think a lot of people do if you even entertain the idea of him leaving.
I just want to wrap this up with one last thing. When I think of this concept, I don't know why my brain goes here. I don't know. Maybe it's just my age, where it hit me in that certain place. Maybe it's because he's in the news for all the wrong reasons. But I think of Brett Favre's career. He made receivers over and over and over again, right? Mm-hmm. Let's go through. When you look at Brett Favre and Sterling Sharp was all pro. You could make arguments that he could be in the Hall of Fame, right? Robert Brooks had 1,500 yards. Then Antonio Freeman was his guy for like 4 years with like 1,200, 1,500. Then there was some guy named Bill Schroeder who had 1,000 yards. Donald Driver had a run. Javon Walker had 1,400 yards. Greg Jennings had, I mean, look, you put dudes out there with quarterbacks and they make them shine. I'm not saying that it's going to be needs to, and he doesn't even need to be like that as long as you have Ja'Marr Chase. I just, at a certain point, you do have to rely on your quarterback to be the dude that creates a great number two in some ways.
There was also a guy named Kenny in a Wranglers commercial where they were playing mud football. Mm-hmm. He had 8 catches for 109 yards during that backyard game of football.
Have you ever tried to do athletics in Wranglers? Or
no,
or
I've
some
never
sort
had
of jeans? Have you ever,
never,
ever well,
I have.
Up?
I have.
Yes. Yeah, I grew up
I
in the age
you
when,
have,
you know, little league teams, you only had a shirt. You didn't have a shirt and pants. You had a shirt and whatever you put on. And for me, it was always blue jeans, but yeah. Not Wranglers.
And back in the day, those were not like today's jeans. The old school jeans, like there's no bend. There is no bend.
No.
No.
Not at all.
Today, I mean, you could do yoga in jeans, which Mo, you do that often, I know.
Oh, yeah, I'm about to do that as soon as I get done here. But you're right. I mean, again, like. I overly simplify this. The reason why you're going to give Joe Burrow all this money and invest in him and make him the face of your franchise, the reason why you took him number one is you believe in him to succeed to a degree, regardless of the personnel around him. Now, that doesn't mean you could just, you know, sign a bunch of the guys off Brett Favre's farm to go play with him. But I mean, you still have to employ smart roster building strategies, but you're doing what you're doing with Joe Burrow because you believe in him to get it done regardless of what happens with the talent around him. And to me, a franchise quarterback is the constant amid this sea of change. And that might mean that one year, for whatever reason, you don't have a great offensive line. You still believe in Joe. Or your defense, well, you know what? It's a little bit deficient. You still believe in Joe. Or we have injuries on, you know, in this particular position group. You still believe in Joe. And to me, I come back to that. They're giving this guy the money they're going to be giving him, deservedly so, because they believe in him to keep the franchise relevant and win a whole lot of football games, kind of regardless of what's happening around him. And that includes at wide receiver, where he will turn okay wide receivers into good ones, and good ones into great ones, and great ones into superstars. I believe in him to be able to do that. And if you disagree, then think twice about writing that check.
It's the same way I feel about anybody that comes on to be a guest on ESPN 1530 from 3 to 6. You're going to make them shine. That's just it. They show up and they sound great because you make them sound great, you know? And that's that's why you are radio's Joe Burrow.
Yeah, sure. Whatever.
Print the shirt.
Thanks, Mo.
Radio's Joe Burrow.
See ya.
Thanks. See you guys.
Flattery will get you somewhere.
Yeah, it will.
So, all right. We said we were going to do some Q&A, so we're going to get to that and go through some of these questions. By the way, one last note on my Brett Favre thing. Had 4 straight years where the Packers had 3 different leading receivers. They won 12-12, 10-10 games. You know who their head coach was? Zach Taylor's father-in-law.
Yeah, Mike Sherman.
Mike Sherman. Just a nugget, because we're all connected. It's all connected. Just like Cincinnati. Give me 5 minutes and I'll figure out how we know the same people, and we probably have been to the same places together. All right, Q&A time. Let's dive a little bit into a little bit of our questions that are out there. And so we're going to start this. I'm just going to kind of go down through the line. We'll see where we get. We'll see how it goes. Let's go and start with Jackson Ford. It says, which Bengals player is most likely to be traded in a BJ Hill type trade this year? Now, BJ Hill, of course, 2 years ago was acquired right before the season started for Billy Price. It was an all-time fleecing of the Giants. BJ Hill has become a stalwart, a rewarded star, making $10 million per year at defensive tackle here. Billy Price, he's hanging on. When I think about this, I think a little bit about the same position group. I would say throw Billy Price in there with names like Benay Benwickery. Okay. Someone who's going to get cut.
Yep.
Someone who, when the Bengals finally look at their 53, say, this guy's not going to make it. He doesn't have a role for us. And I think when you look at their roster right now, there's, we keep joking almost about all the guys with questions at tackle. Jonah Williams, Jackson Carman, Lyle Collins, Cody Ford, Deontay Smith, Hakeem Adeniji. A lot of these guys, almost all of them, have played meaningful football. That's all behind Orlando Brown. Have played meaningful football in this league. An offensive lineman who's played some meaningful football in this league and who the Bengals are not going to have on their team is the type of Billy Price person that you'd be trading away, and maybe there's value in that. Teams are always desperate that time of year for offensive line help.
And that's really the only position on the team that where you could see that happen. And I mean, that you just don't have the surplus at other positions where you, you're going to cut guys and maybe another team would be interested in them, but more than likely they're going to be able to get them on waivers. Look what they did in the draft. They went and they added to the defensive line and they added to the secondary. There's nothing at linebacker that suggests that you've got enough of a surplus there to deal anybody. Maybe a Chris Evans, something like that, but it feels like it would be a offensive lineman, specifically a tackle. They've got so many out there right now. There's no way they're going to cut probably half of them. I haven't looked at the roster to see how many they have, but that group is huge. Just to try to figure out who's going to be the last man standing at right tackle and beat out everybody else. So I don't know if I would put a specific name on it because we don't know how that's going to play out. But yeah, I mean, LC, maybe Jonah. We've talked about a Jonah trade forever now since he requested one. Maybe he's the guy that if he's not going to win that job that they deal him. But I really can't see it happening at any other position.
Yeah. I mean, maybe receiver, right? Yeah. I mean, where you would talk about somebody like if someone had interest in Trent Taylor, mm-hmm. Where he's going to be on the outs. You have Charlie Jones. You're not going to need him. You have a lot of other young guys. Maybe there's a trade there. Maybe who knows? Who knows how running back's going to shake out? There could be something with the back of that running back room. But I think most likely, just because of the desperation you get at that position and teams willing to trade and make sure they get somebody, it could be, this is going to tie into the next question. So I'm going to go ahead and ask the next question and bring these two together a little bit. Bearcat Scott asked, with a regular season of 17 games in the playoffs, as well as the offensive line injuries this past year, is there any scenario where you see them keeping both Jonah and Collins? You know, Collins is someone we're kind of under the assumption would be the odd man out here. Assuming Jonah takes to right tackle and you still have Jackson Carman. To me, someone would probably trade for Lyle Collins that needs a right tackle. Again, played meaningful football. If he's proving to be healthy, you could probably get something for him. I'm not saying it would be a lot, but you could probably get something for him. Maybe that's the guy. Deontay Smith? I mean, he was a project pick in the middle rounds. We haven't really seen him. But if somebody thinks that they can get it out of him, it's a guy who was a decent pick. He's still young. If the Bengals don't have space for him anymore amongst all these question mark tackles, maybe he's somebody that somebody has interest in and you can get something for him. So if we're talking about who that could be, I'm with you. The offensive line looks loaded. Those are two names that stick out to me. The question here specifically, Jay, about is there any scenario? When we're both under the agreement, I mean, that's unlikely. If you're talking $22 million potentially in these two guys that we don't even know if either of them would start. Yeah. If Jackson Carman won that job and one of the two of them isn't going to start, you can have insurance there. You could have the possibility of kicking Collins in particular inside, who's done it before. You certainly could see him fitting in that regard. So maybe there's answers there where that's where you want to keep that option open, but that's just a lot of money. The only scenario I see it is one where something is the fallout of whatever happens with these contracts. So they maybe they don't get as many done. They have $14 million in cap space right now. Maybe they say, look, let's take advantage of this luxury of cap space that we have. We don't need to add. Let's just keep. Let's over the hell spend on our offensive line and have Collins as a pup option and see where we sit after week six, you know? And maybe that's when something else changes between Jonah or Collins or Carmen or whatever. That's the scenario I see. And it's just a lot of, I mean, they already have a lot of money in the line. It's just a lot of money in the line. I think something would probably have to fall apart. Certainly, I don't see, I don't know. It would have to be them saying, let's just take advantage of a luxury that maybe they didn't spend on extensions the way they thought they would.
Yeah, I mean, I hate talking about this as a scenario, but the scenario I could see is if something did happen to Jackson Carmen in camp where he got hurt and he was going to miss significant time. I'm not going to say it's not impossible and they could make it work to keep them both, but it is. It's so much money. And I've said in the past, there's no way. I don't know. I would put it at 100% chance that they're not going to have both of those guys, but it's still up there in the 90s somewhere. It wouldn't make sense. Unless, like you said, where they just put Collins on pup, ride it out and see what happens. Maybe everybody's healthy when they start the season, but you never know. You saw how bad injuries hurt this team when those O linemen started going down. So it would be a nice insurance plan to have, and they can't afford it. But it's just with how much money's tied up in Karras and Kappa. Especially OBJ. I keep calling him OBJ, and I know that's not his nickname, but Orlando Brown Jr. I don't know. I think that would be the scenario for me is if guys start going down in camp and they have to keep both of them.
Let's go to the next question here. Kev Gotti, is there an heir apparent to Lou Anarumo in the building? Right hand man. I can't see him being around after one more great season, but I'd love a sense of continuity. I mean, we kind of discussed this a little bit back when Lou was up for the Arizona job about, you know, what is they had a plan. I mean, I know they had a plan in place. They knew it was a possibility he could leave. I mean, that Arizona carrot was hanging out there forever. So obviously there is a plan in place, and you now have continued grooming as everyone sees the writing on the wall that Lou certainly could be a head coach soon with another great year, especially if it involves another deep run. I mean, James Betcher is the most obvious here. He was kind of a guy Lou brought in. I mean, that's where his connection lies. You wonder if James Betcher would follow Lou if Lou got a head coaching job. I think that was something that we thought could happen as a defensive coordinator. But Betcher's been a coordinator before. He's in the building. He knows the team. He's gained trust of everyone. He's certainly the one that makes the most sense from a resume and continuity perspective.
Yeah, I mean, Livingston's been here the longest, but I don't see that happening. Charles Burks is still a little too young. Marion Hobby, I don't think would be in the mix. So it would be Betcher, and I mean, he was Lou's boss in New York. That relationship goes back a long way. Well, that would be a tough call for him. You can go be a defensive coordinator for Lou on a team that no doubt is struggling if they're looking for a new head coach, or you could stay in Cincinnati and be the defensive coordinator here and have Joe Burrow to help make your defense look better at every turn. But that would be the one. I wouldn't rule out them going out and getting somebody young. But I, if you're talking continuity, who's the most likely? It'd be Betcher, and I'm not sure anybody else even would qualify.
Yeah, and you never know how internally people feel once you get down to making those decisions. But for Betcher, whether he would leave or not, I mean, one, you're not going to probably be the play caller on defense wherever Lou's a head coach. That would be Lou Anarumo. So you have to figure at that point, you can stay in Cincinnati, be the defensive play caller. It's one step closer to potentially being a head coach if that's something that you desire to be. All right, let's go next. Andreas M., what would you plan to do for a weekend trip to Cincinnati Bengals game is included. First time Danish visitor, which is a reminder. The Hude UK game announcement was put out. The trip that they're doing, a bunch of people coming over for a trip. It's Bengals Bills. They picked a good one. It's like a 3 or 4 day trip. If you follow the Hude UK people, then you can get in on that. Bengals not going over there, but the trip is happening over to here. So keep an eye on them if you want to get involved in that. What do you say, Jay?
It's hard because I think two of the most attractive options are the Cincinnati Zoo and Kings Island, but those are all day things. Maybe not the zoo as much, but that's going to eat up a big chunk. If you're only here for a weekend, it's hard to throw that much time into one activity. I think Findlay Market has to be on your list. Just the historic nature of that place and the really cool shopping. But again, if you're coming from overseas, you're probably not going to be able to take a lot back with you. So you're just window shopping. You're not actually going to be buying stuff unless you're going to eat it on site. Beyond that, I mean,
I'll drop one in.
Yeah, go ahead.
Look, if you're coming over, like I know my European people a little bit, gotten to know them. There better be a brewery tour involved, okay? Cincinnati has spectacular breweries. You're coming over here. You're looking to have a good time. You got all day. Get yourself a bus that someone's going to drive for you, or just decide to get into the Uber world. Taft's Ale House down in OTR. Make that a part of your OTR. Do an OTR day. Go around, like you said, Findlay Market. Go into Taft's Ale House. Go down to all those. Just go walk around Washington Park. Get into a great restaurant down there, all those great ones, and then pop a brewery tour on it. Get out the 50 West, of course, you know that. Go see that. Come into my hood. Say what's up to me at Madtree. Come down to Oakley. Get Ryan Geist in there. You know, you've got all this great history. That's a part of it too. When you get down into OTR, that's really cool. And I love a part of, you know, keeping those involved too. So I would, you know, there's a million breweries in town that are all fun for different ways. Those are a few that I would add in there, but I would have that a part of it. You know, certainly if you're coming in for a Bengals game, great. I mean, if you can add a potential Reds game onto that too, I do always recommend going to see a baseball game while you're here. It's a fun thing to do, and it's a chance for you to kind of hang out downtown, Smale Park, all that stuff. You're right, Jay. I knew you would recommend Kings Island as a coaster guy, of course. But I would do a, you know, I would pop some restaurants in there. You know, I would try to find a Soto reservation. I have a list if you want it, of about 20 different restaurants that I love in the city that I think it's a fantastic food city. So I would focus on food and drink, and the downtown history is certainly a place where you'd start if you're coming from out of town. That would give you, I think, a unique experience that you really can't find anywhere else. And then go ride some coasters with Jay. Be careful, though. You'll get you in trouble.
They do have those guided brewery tours, because I see the buses all the time up here in Hamilton going to Municipal. So that is a good way. I don't know if you can craft your own stops, or if you just have to rely on what they do, or like Paul said, just find somebody that's willing to be your driver and just take you all over.
Yeah, pay a driver. You're paying to come over here. Do it right. All right. Like that question. Let's go this from Mark. Is there a reason drafted running backs like Travion Williams and Chris Evans have such a hard time breaking through for playing time? Chase Brown was drafted in a similar spot to these two guys. Is there something that makes him much better? Thought Chris Evans was a receiving back type. All right, Mark. I like this question. There are a couple Chris Evans questions. There's a lot of running back questions. So let's just kind of unpack this here. Chris Evans, I think it was viewed that last year was his shot. Last preseason was for Chris Evans. We wrote about him. Mm-hmm. We talked about the opportunity he had on him. The coaches wanted him to seize it. I think they thought he could displace Samaje Perine because of exactly what you talked about, what his receiving skills could be. But he was not good running north and south. He couldn't stop bouncing. He was not running well between the tackles. And when you are an offense that relies on efficient running and avoiding negative plays like, oh, I don't know, you bounce it and it causes a hold on the tackle over and over again, like happened in the preseason. People talk about the long runs he had. He was bouncing and freelancing and offensive linemen weren't ready for it and they got busted for holds. It happened a couple of times. He wasn't following his tracks. That's a problem. That's a problem. They can't rely on you to do that. It doesn't matter how good a receiver you are on the backfield. And I think it really hurt his stock. They could still find use for him, certainly as a receiver, and they did. I mean, he caught the game-winning touchdown against the Chiefs. I think there's hope for him. It's the reason he's still around. But he's just got to get better at being an efficient runner in whatever small role he would be used as a runner if he's going to be out there on third downs.
And pass pro. I mean, he didn't take the next step with that either. And I don't think that's the case with Travion. I think Travion was just stuck behind those guys. And he's, I don't know that he has the size to be the durable number two. I think he is your, I think it's a great testament to the promise they see in him that he is still here despite barely getting any run at all in the backfield. But I don't know. I think that Chase Brown is the guy that's going to break through, and Samaje's gone. That door is open. But I think with Travion, the issue with him was more being landlocked as opposed to not doing what they wanted to do as far as taking the right tracks and following the script of the play, which was the issue with Chris, yeah, or is the issue with Chris.
Totally agree. I mean, Travion was kind of viewed as much more of a mix and backup specifically, mm-hmm. and not necessarily in the receiver role. And honestly, early on in his career, watching him in camp and stuff, he really struggled catching the ball. I think they saw improvement there, and they really liked what they saw of him last year. There's a reason he jumped over Evans. And I think there's hope. They feel like there's hope that Williams can do what Samaje Perine did, and that's carve out a role for himself. I mean, he certainly showed it at times last year when he was given opportunity. They're going to give him chance to this. If last year in preseason was partially a Chris Evans opportunity, I think this year in preseason is a Travion Williams opportunity. So we'll see. What does Chase Brown do? I think Chase Brown is going to be a complete back carrying the ball. I think you like who he is as a runner. As a dude who's going to take it and can get you to the house. He can make guys miss at the second level. He's thick. He's been a workhorse. Now, Travion had big numbers at A&M too, but he was much more of a wide zone fit. Mm-hmm. I think they like Chase Brown as the gap downhill fit a little bit more. And so for that reason, that's kind of something that Chase Brown does. He can catch the ball well enough. They'll see how well once they get him going in camp. I think there is hope for Brown. Let's just say they had a higher round grade on Chase Brown now than they did on either Evans or Travion. Okay. Along that note, also from Mark, a run passer boot coming out of the bye week. Who's getting the most playing time? Chase Brown, Jordan Battle, or DJ Turner?
Well, I guess I would have to clarify playing time at their position or playing time.
Let's go playing time, period. Special total teams. Snaps logged. Let's throw teams in there.
I still think I would run with Chase Brown. Just you know, you've seen what this looks like, what the two back mix looks like, and he's most likely to be the two to mix in, if not supplanting him. So he's gonna see the field. I guess I would pass on DJ Turner. You need fourth corner. There could always be an injury where he could slide in and get more playing time. And Jordan Battle, I'll boot him, but I mean, he's going to be out there for just about every special team. And then who knows, maybe in training camp, he makes a statement, makes a case for a job, and he doesn't necessarily win it. But if either one of those guys, Nick or Dax, struggles, he could slide in there. But I still think he's the least likely to, even knowing that he's going to be out there all those special teams, I think he's the least likely to lead in snaps out of the bye. I'd run with Chase Brown, boot DJ, or pass on DJ Turner and boot Battle.
I would flip Battle and Turner only for the fact that Battle is definitely going to play more on teams. He's going to be a core four special teams guy. And Turner and Battle are both one injury away from playing. So to me, the injury thing is no different.
Yeah, true.
Now, Cheeto's coming off the ACL, but I don't really have much concern with that. You know, and now maybe there's three different guys that could get injured because Turner could step in and be your slot guy. Who knows what happens there between Dax Hill, Turner, Jalen Davis. They've got options. But I would lean Battle just because I think he is going to be an absolute instant special teams star. I mean, I think the expectation is he's going to come in and be a real leader immediately for that group. And so being on the field that much puts him over the top for me. And I agree with Chase Brown. I think he's going to, I mean, at that point, he could be the guy, no question. Yeah. All right. A lot of tight ends were drafted. So what is your prediction on how many tight ends the Bengals pick up off waivers? We've kind of talked about this topic a little bit in that you see nine tight ends go in the first three rounds. Well, who are some of the players that are on the back end of that might get released or cap casualty that comes out of being supplanted by a young player? How many? I think one add. Someone was asking about Mitchell Wilcox earlier in the comments. I think Mitchell Wilcox probably is brought back. It seems obvious. I guess he could latch on somewhere else, but a guy who they trust who's played seems to be a good competitor for the back of that room. I would think Mitchell Wilcox is back, barring something unforeseen that we don't know about. And then I think another. I mean, I don't know. I don't know whether it's a trade. I don't know if it's a waiver wire. Those are really hard things to predict. There's a bunch of guys they have eyes on, and you shake the tree will shake during camp and preseason and final cuts, and you see what falls. But they're gonna have interest. It'll be a position they'll look to potentially target if they're looking to make a trade, if they're doing a player for player deal, or look for this year's Devin Asiasi, right?
Yeah, and it could be zero. I mean, if you don't count Wilcox, but at every turn they've gone out of their way to say how much they like Hudson and Bowers, the two practice squad tight ends. Is that just blowing smoke, or is there something to that? I guess we'll see in camp how those guys look. But if they are as good as they say they are, I think they would be fine putting those guys back on the practice squad and not necessarily needing to go out. If it's a tight end that's a surprise cut, that even then it would be hard to get them on waivers because they're going to be way back at the back end of the waiver wire. If it's someone that everybody
they got all
wants.
Those guys last year, remember they ended up getting three last year.
Well, yeah, nobody wanted them.
It's true.
But you know, if that is, I mean, are there? I don't know. I haven't looked around the league enough to see how many other teams are strapped at tight end. But if it's a guy that has a lot of interest, then they're probably not going to get it.
Yeah, well, and you never know. I mean, I you know, the one a name that's interesting to me, and I'm floating this. This is not me like having talked to anybody, but you look at, you know, the Rams are getting young, churning, looking to save money. They have Tyler Higbee making $6 million. They drafted Davis Allen in the fifth round. They've got other guys that are young players behind him that they've kind of tried to invest in. Maybe they make some sort of a move there because they're just recognizing what this year is for them, and cash saved is cash saved to get themselves straight. Again, I don't know if that's something that happens, but certainly somebody who would be known here that would be the Rams connection is still one that does play as far as knowing who they are. One that our friend Charlie Goldsmith has pointed out, he's Team Josiah DeGuara, bringing him back because the Packers did draft two tight ends. So what's left in the back of that room? A former pick in the third round out of UC. He's small. He's 6'2", 238. So I don't know if the Bengals would want to go that small at the position. That would be the question there. But if you were talking about somebody who could be let go and just got drafted over twice, perhaps that's somebody, and he'd be a special teamer type too that they would that you'd really like in that position. So a couple of names to throw out there.
Sign me up for Higbee and Higgins on the roster when they play the Chiefs.
Higbee and Higgins. Yeah, oh, right. Together. Yeah. Yeah. For our boy, Justin Reed.
Justin Reed. Yeah.
Okay. Let's go. Let's see. Any update sense with the never-ending Mixon saga? Legal issues don't seem like they'll be resolved until late in the season. No. No updates on that right now. Still fluctuating. Still hanging out there. Still yet to be resolved on all fronts. The only thing I will continue to say is, continue to answer, Joe Mixon will not be a $10 million running back. I don't know when all this is going to go down, but it's going to go down. Yeah. Let's go. All right, Jay, fun one from Bengals rotational piece on Twitter. Rank your favorite rookie numbers. And do the rookies get to pick? They do get their choice of availability, I believe. Some of them get kind of stuck. There's not a ton. But they can pick amongst the few that are still available, and then that can change. Once guys get cut, they can move their numbers after the final cuts before the season starts. But rank your favorite. Let's just do top two, bottom two out of Myles Murphy at 99, DJ Turner at 20, Jordan Battle at 27, Charlie Jones at 15, Chase Brown at 30, Andre Yoshivash 80, Brad Robbins 10, DJ Ivy 38.
Number one's Murphy. I mean, 99's a cool number,
yeah.
Anyhow. And no one's really made their mark in that number for the Bengals. I mean, can you think of the greatest 99 in Bengals history?
Marcus Hunt. I mean,
well, there you go. Second round bust. Big Daddy, first round bust. Mm. David Pollack, because of injury, never panned. They've never had a great 99. So that is wide open for Myles Murphy to really stamp that number in Bengals history. My second would be DJ Turner. I like 20. Just kind of putting it out there that Eli Apple is not coming back, and he's taking his job. He's taking his number, and I just like the way it looks on him. So those would be my top two.
All right. You know what? I'm tempted, for the reasons you just stated, to put Myles Murphy at the bottom. All these busts. All these top pick busts at 99 here. You just named three of them. I don't know. Do you want to be in that line if you were the first round pick? You want to associate yourself with Big Daddy and Marcus Hunt? I mean, is that what you want? I'm tempted to put him at the bottom. Although you're right. 99 in general, extremely cool number. Not debating that. Coolness, but history? Maybe not on Myles Murphy's side. So, but for that fact, I'm not going to put him in my top. Also in my bottom, DJ Ivy having to wear 38, tough draw. Not the number of someone who's a starting cornerback in this league or going to make a team usually. Don't like the 38 for a corner. Tough draw for him. Number one, Andre Yoshivash, 80. Collinsworth vibes. Love the old school. I'm an old school soul. Yeah. All these kids in the low numbers, in the teens, the receivers wearing the teens. It's so cute. Give me an old school receiver wearing 80. Yes. Let's go. I like it. Give me that. And I'm with you on Turner. I like a good 20 number. I like the elimination of the Eli Apple, the statement on Eli Apple. I know people like Eli Apple, but he was a bit of a headache. Selfishly, we're very selfish on our side, yeah. To track and have to, you know, worry about. So I'll say that those are kind of my, it's a fun question. I like that, but I'm nervous about Murphy. Don't like that 99 lineage. Don't like that 99 lineage. Lastly, I got one from Jimmy D. Have your beloved Everton done enough to scrape over the line? And how nervous are you feeling ahead of this weekend? That's right. One match left. They are narrowly ahead of relegation, only by a couple points. It's going to be close. I don't like that my fandom has come down to one-game freakouts over relegation. This is supposed to be about liking a team that might win something. It's merely about not being the worst and having to sweat out getting demoted. Yeah, I'm nervous. Their team stinks. If they lose, there's a chance I'm gonna have to watch them on like some weird stream that I gotta pay for. Like, I don't even know how to watch the championship. I don't want that. So yes, I'm nervous, but I remain hopeful.
I don't follow them, so I don't have a dog in the fight, but I am curious now that I know what's at stake here. What time do they play?
I believe 11:30 Eastern is okay. The time. The most of the matches all go off at the same.
The same.
Because it's all connected on who wins, who loses, up and down, and championships, and Europe League, Europa, all this stuff. So I'm nervous.
I'll keep an eye on it.
Yeah. Jay, do you have an Arby's?
Oh,
we didn't talk about Arby's. I didn't know if you just had one in your back pocket.
I can't say I do. I thought it was odd, and this was a guy whose number I don't like, Brad Robbins, the punter, getting 10. I know they weren't going to retire Huber's number, but it just seems too soon. But he's from Central Ohio. He's from Columbus, Ohio, Westerville. And he seemed surprised by how coated in sweat his hat was after yesterday's practice. He came in the locker room and took his hat off and showed it to me how wet his hat was with sweat. And I was like, that's kind of what the weather is around here. And it's going to get a whole lot hotter. But he's one of those weird guys. You never know what you're going to get from him when you talk to him. And a wet ball cap was what I got yesterday.
I'm glad you mentioned a wet ball cap because it takes me into mine. There is such a wide variety when we're dealing with these not really practices of headwear. Like the offensive linemen are all out there wearing Cincy hats. Like, you know, it's not serious when like the players are all wearing just like normal hat. You get the linemen in Cincy hats. We're all talking about Joe Burrow's headband. You've got the like, I always used to like the bucket hat, the wide brim bucket hat with the with the drawstring underneath. That was the sign of somebody making a broad announcement. I am not here to try hard today. I'm in a but. Usually the bucket hat is wearing slides, you know, going socks and slides style like our old Super Bowl buddy. What was our Super Bowl buddy's name?
Oh my gosh! I can't believe I forgot it so fast.
That's killing me. I can't believe I forgot that. But the bucket hat, like, is you see that? You don't see as much of it now. But I feel like some of these hats, it really is also a pronouncement of like, yeah, this isn't going to be like that. Now I'm a hat guy. I have to wear a hat. Bald. Shout out BJ Hill coming to the bald side, who was shouting out to the bald folks after he got shaved last week. It's good to have him here on our team. But you know, gotta be a hat guy if you're going to be a bald guy out there. So I get it. Like I get it, but there's a lot of focus on hats and people wearing different things in their heads. And it is really kind of a way of saying, yeah, this isn't really, I just always liked the bucket hat. Not today. I said, today's not today.
I mean, Orlando Brown had the old school like NBA white headband for his headgear. And I just Googled it real quick. Vernon Hargraves.
Vernon Hargraves. Man, mad at myself for not remembering Vernon Hargraves, our boy.
Great. Never seen Zach so mad.
Oh, man. What a great photo of the overhead shot of everyone celebrating and right in the middle of it. Socks and slides. He had AirPods in it. Did he have AirPods in?
I can't remember. It'd be great. I'm sure he did.
Oh, man. Great stuff. All right, Jay. We'll wrap it up. We'll be back. See you next week. Zach Taylor speaks after the practice, so that will be going off next week. I'm taking off on a little bit of a vacay next week. So we're talking about our off-season shows. Really excited about that. Jay and I have hatched some pretty good ideas. We've figured out our rewatch this year. Mo is very excited about it. Jay and I are very excited about it. We might be able to make you extra excited about it. I think it's going to be really fun. Lots of good stuff coming your way. 2-on-2 is going to be back. We're working on some of those. All that stuff we liked last off season coming your way again. In the works. We're cooking it up. What is it? What's the... Look, it's in the process. Okay? It's in the process. We're doing just like the Burrow contract. We're working to get that done, I said. All right. Thanks, everyone, for listening. We will talk to you next time. Have a good one, everybody.